Scott, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's fine.
What's fine? That's kind of a vague response. What is fine?
I don't know. What were we talking about again?
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 508, recorded on July 16th, 2018.
Hello, and welcome to the 508th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 341st edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Kirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So last week's episode was strange when I looked at the recording, because I had two recordings, and the first one was normal, except for the fact that the next 40 minutes, it was just you two talking and my thing was silent. I mean, I also had... It recorded a second thing in which everything that I said was on that one. So, yeah, I guess I was locked out of my own recording.
That's weird.
That is weird.
I don't know how that happened. It's just strange.
Should have reached out to me. I keep all these recorded, too.
I get that, but I still had everything, so I didn't need to. If I didn't have the second thing recorded and all I had was me talking for 19 minutes and then nothing, then I would have asked you for the...
Sure.
One thing I did that was odd was I forgot to say what year it was. I said July 9th, and that's it. Or maybe I accidentally deleted it. I don't know. But it was strange.
Yeah.
But, a lot of weird things are happening. We're not even going to talk about politics. That's just too fun to talk about right now. But we will talk about what you have been playing, TJ.
Well, to start out, actually, I had a big change in my life. I just got married last Thursday.
Oh, really?
Congratulations. For some reason, I thought you already were married, but congratulations.
So I've been... I described...
Like an old married couple, just not yet married.
So, I describe Samantha as my wife because we've been together for a decade. And we've lived together for 6 years. So, I just stopped saying...
Wait a minute, how old are you?
I'm 29.
So, you've been living together since you were 19?
Yes. Basically. So,
I pretty much did the same thing, but not as for long, but I would call Deborah my wife before we got married, because I was, you know, ready to be married to her, so.
Yeah, we pretty much had the thing where we were just going to invite all our friends and family and loved ones in and have a big old party, so that's what we did. And I managed to fit a little bit of video gaming in between there, but not much. Project Octopath Traveler came out
recently.
I want
that game.
And for those of you who don't know, this is from Square Enix. It's very similar to the Saga series, like Saga Frontier. There are 8 protagonists, and each of them have their own story, and each of the stories sort of intersect with each other. So you pick a character, and you go at it. And they all have very distinct personalities and combat traits and world traits about them, too. Like... there's a knight, and he's obviously the big stalwart attacker, but he can also challenge people to duels. Like, you can go up to NPCs in the world and challenge them to duels, and if you defeat them, then you gain special you get special rewards for it. There's a dancer who can persuade people to follow her, and they will join her in combat. So, like, if you get a strong character NPC to follow you, they can be super helpful when it comes to fighting. And it's just really neat. Like, the music is good, the storytelling is good. They do that weird thing where they vocally voice some of the character dialogue but then don't on others, and that's kind of bothersome, but it is what it is. Voice work is costly. So
you're going to love this. But did you see today's news about the game?
What about it?
Well, apparently, Square Enix severely underestimated the demand for physical copies of the game. It was sold out, and people couldn't buy it during the 3-day weekend in Japan, and physical copies were sold out on Amazon in the U.S.
I believe it. There hasn't been a JRPG like this in a long time.
Agreed.
I'm talking about, like, the Saga games. The last couple that came out were pretty bad. And what's Greed?
I mean, it sold out all over the world, so...
Scott, did you say that there was one that was like it?
I was agreeing with you that there hasn't been one like this. I mean,
I thought you said greed, and I was like, is that a game? No,
I said greed, not greed.
Agreed. Sorry.
Yeah,
'cause I mean, I looked at it and it reminded me of Final Fantasy VI, which immediately, triggers my nostalgia and wanting to.
I like the
revisit a game that looks like that, and it looks even better than like Final Fantasy VI. It has that perspective.
I like the background, how they just fade in the distance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that. And again, it's also like Saga Frontier with the 8 travelers and the battle combat. I was curious if they do the same leveling that they do in Saga Frontier.
It's similar-ish. I remember playing the demo, and it was somewhat similar to that. The other thing that's similar to that, outside of having the multiple heroes, is that, like, speaking to the backgrounds and stuff, it's a combination of painted backgrounds and 3D backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting when it comes together properly. So I've been having fun with that game. I'm ready to be back into it. My family has finally left, so I have more time on my hands, and I'm ready to jump into that game and really, really move forth with it. It's super fun.
Yeah. And you have to understand, this is probably a big win for the Switch. Now, here's the thing. Part of the reason why there weren't enough physical copies to sell, because the Switch isn't exactly, you know, something that deals heavily with online stuff. I mean, you have the space issues and all that stuff, so more people are going to be buying a physical copy of the game, you know, on the Switch. But, you know, I think this is finally a game that's coming out that's not from Nintendo, which is saying, yeah, this will sell games on the Switch. You know, there are games that are available for the Switch that aren't Mario, that aren't Zelda.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. It is going to be a big one. I'm happy to see the support for the game, because it is kind of like, it's kind of like a bygone style at this point, and to see it do so well. I mean, we've seen this in the past where, like, you see games like Divinity Original Sin 2, which is a very Baldur's Gate style game, do incredibly well.
And
Pillars of Eternity and Tyranny, and it's cool to see like stuff like this from our earlier years come back and kind of just nail it and introduce it to a whole new generation.
Agreed. Yes. I hope this is it's just brings more 3D or third party developers to the Switch and bring more JRPs or just other games.
I mean, it's not hard for Square Enix to do it. By the way, how's the music score?
It's beautiful. I love the music in the game so far. I love the battle music. I love the world traveling music. I really haven't heard a track on there so far that didn't put me in a certain mood that was cool.
Because
about the game,
it's been extolled. You know, the music score has been talked about. So yeah.
It really does. It really does bring sort of that majesty of the old school like JRPG. Like some of those games, like Xenogears, is probably my favorite JRPG soundtrack, and I would say that Project Octopath is on its way to impressing me as much as that. So, I've enjoyed it.
By the way, one thing I don't think you mentioned, and that is, you can actually get the demo for the game. And if you pick up the game, all the save data that you did in the demo will be transferred to the game. So the demo actually is sort of like a prologue, so that you can, you know, or at least you can play a little bit of it. And if you like it, all the stuff that you did in the demo, you know, isn't wasted time. Well, it's never a waste of time to do a demo, but you know, you can actually do what you did in the demo if you like what you did in the demo and continue it in the full game.
That is cool of them to do.
It is. Like I didn't know that. I didn't save my file from the demo. So
yeah, well, you can. If you go to the official site, it talks about it.
Mm. That is cool, though.
Did you get the Wayfarer's edition?
I didn't. I just got the digital online edition from the store.
For those of you who don't know, the Wayfarer's edition comes with a pop-up book. As well as a cloth map and the CD and, you know, a coin. But how many games do you know that come with a pop-up book? Yeah,
I think that makes sense because that's kind of the way the art looks. It's like it has this field, and you're like, it almost feels like you're looking at a pop-up book, and these characters are just sitting in the middle of a book, and that's playing a story for you. Yeah. So that I can see how that works.
You can get in a digital edition, mind you. It isn't like it's only on hard, you know, hard. On, yeah. You know, it's, but how many people who know are going to buy full games from the eShop, really?
I was wanting to buy it from the eShop because it's
mean, here's the thing: if you can't find the physical copy anywhere, you might as well get
right.
it. But you know, I wonder if you're ever going to see any more Wayfarers editions.
Well, those are probably gone.
Yeah, it's probably gone forever.
Yeah,
just like my.
That's always eBay.
Yeah, like my copy of Warhammer Online, I got the special edition, and I still have the horn, I still have the necklace, I still have the whetstone necklace and all that stuff. It's pretty cool. But I lost the art book because it got destroyed, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But all the other stuff I still have. What have you been playing, Scott?
Zelda Breath of the Wild. I'm nearing finishing the game. I've gotten all the divinity beasts conquered, and now I just have to go to the castle and defeat Ganon, and that'll be the end of what is an awesome entry into the Zelda legacy.
So are you going to be picking up Wayfarer on the eShop? I mean, now you do have a Switch.
Oh, yeah, I do want to get the game on the digital. Because it was only like 3 gigs of space, and I have like 23 free, so I don't mind downloading it on there and having it digitally. I like not having to worry about cartridges and discs and whatnot, and having it in one console is fine enough for me.
I might have to pause for a second. Jonah, is yours still recording?
I'm still recording, but you might as well keep recording. I wonder, if it's going to be like last time and have two files. So we'll see. Just keep recording, and I'll let you know if for whatever reason you got cut off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, you're both recording, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Apologies for that. I don't know what happened. It just kind of kicked me out really quick.
Yeah. So I was playing Cultist Simulator, and I got an ending in which. And it's very strange, and I know that Scott thought it was a happy ending, but I'm not so sure. Because here's the thing. Now, you know about Cultist Simulator is where you're working to make your own cult, and there are several endings, you know. Some of them are bad, like you die, you starve, or you run out of money.
Mm-hmm.
But this one just said, now, here's the thing. I kept working at the... as a clerk, and the old guy retired and made me the boss of the, you know, made me, you know, president of the company. You know, I now run the company. And at some point, it sort of like says, okay, you have a chance to work really hard, and if you do, the game ends. And it's sort of a death animation. However, the ending it gave me is evening falls. I have my fire, my books, my clock, my window on the world where they do things, where they do other things. I could have been unhappy. I'm not unhappy. This was a successful life, and when it is over, the sweet earth will fill my mouth softer than splinters. And in parentheses, it says, this might be considered a victory. What it's telling me is that, yeah, you're a fucking quitter. You didn't go for it. You just decided, yeah, I'm just going to be...
That's not how I interpreted that.
What?
That's not how I interpreted that, and I don't think that's exactly what
the last three lines, softer.
That last
splinters.
Line was, this can be considered a victory because you found happiness. I mean, that's the whole point of cults, is to find some
meaning
in life.
Cult of
simulator
is you're supposed to, you know, talk to the elder god that's Lovecraftian. Yeah. You know, I quit is what the game is saying.
I don't interpret it that way.
It says this might be considered a victory.
I'm pretty sure it didn't say might. It said could
this,
be.
No, this might be. I'm looking at the screenshot right now. This might be considered a victory. So depending on how you look at it, you know, I got an achievement for doing it, so that was a sort of victory.
I mean,
it's sort of like Far Cry 5, in which if you just sit at the dinner table for 10 minutes, he comes back and the game's over, and you never played the game. I think that's what this is. Yeah, you played the game, but you didn't really, you know, you just chickened out and just, you know, went for not being a cult leader.
Or like in Friday the 13th on Nintendo, technically if you turn the game off, you've won, but it's not the way you're supposed to win.
Well, that's the same thing as the Stanley Parable. I remember one of the endings has this woman telling you, you know, you're about to fall into a pit. And the developer said, well, in that case, the way to win is to turn the game off. Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
I should really check. How many years have I not been playing Stanley Parable? Because you're supposed to get that achievement for not playing for 5 years. I wonder how far along I am in that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm starting over again, and now I'm playing a trust fundy, which means I got a lot of money, but it's kind of hard. And I saw there's a way to start working in the clerk office again, and I'm avoiding doing that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just painting and doing manual work. Here's the thing. Cultist Simulator is almost a puzzle in itself, in which it encourages you to explore and try different things. And there's, of course, a wiki for it, but I'm not going to the wiki. I just want to see for myself. You know, it's a game of discovery. I want to see what things do what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying the lore. I'm reading the cards very carefully to see what's going on in the game. And, you know, like, I learned how to stop dying from despair, which means you get so unhappy you commit suicide. I've learned how to get contentment. You know, there are different ways to get contentment without having to snort opium. I've learned how to deal with injuries and decrepitude and all that stuff. Well, you can't deal with decrepitude, but I can deal with afflictions and breaking a bone, you know. And I've learned how to have one of my hunters murdered, you know, because
nice.
when he gets too damning evidence, he starts arresting your followers, and then he finally arrests you. And if you get arrested, that's it. And he's not like from the government; he's actually from a secret society. So yeah, you don't get a fair trial. I haven't died by fascination yet, in which I become so fascinated I lose myself. And I think that's another insanity ending.
Yeah. But it's a good game so far. Like, you're enjoying everything that goes with it, like the little quirks.
It's an interesting game. I don't know if I like the game or not. I guess it's drawn me in, but it's sort of hard to play in that. Well, for one thing, at some point you get a bunch of cards, and it's like it's hard to keep track of all the cards you have. But on the other hand, you know, it's sort of like, and I feel lost, but then again, you know, once I stop feeling lost, I think I'll like the game a lot more. It's not unfair.
Yeah.
And I remember once I was getting despair, and it said, here's the thing. Usually things are like 60 seconds. You know, you have these things that count down time. You can pause at any time. And if you play this game, I encourage you, pause every time something resolves immediately. Pause it.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, you know, things might. So it's sort of like I had 35 seconds before I would die of despair. So out of desperation, oh, here's a nightclub. So I went there to the nightclub, and then I added money to the nightclub. And what happens is, oh, I got contentment, and it prevented me from falling in despair. And if I take despair and content and dream about it with contentment, it removes it. So I was learning how to deal with that sort of stuff. So every time I play, I last a lot longer and longer and longer. Now, all I have to do is learn how to recruit people, because I always get one recruit, and I don't know quite how I got it, or they're just assigned to me. And I have acquaintances. In the last game, I was building up acquaintances. I have to learn how to recruit them. So
it sounds kind of like, like, it could be fun, but in sort of a papers please way of figuring out the little quirks to how everything works.
Papers please is far more straightforward. This one, here's the thing. Watch the trailer for Cultist Simulator, and you'll get an idea of how it is. I will say it is unique, and these guys did a previous game, so I think this is sort of like a more built upon of their previous game, which had nothing to do with Lovecraftian mythos.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, I tweeted it, and the developer tweeted back, and they just tweeted back, softer than Splinters. So yeah,
nice.
Cultist Simulator is a weird, and it's only $15, by the way. It's not an expensive game, and it's on Steam. It's one of those games, you know, you owe it to yourself if you want something different to try it out, like Papers, Please, or This War of Mine. Except a lot, I don't know if it's I don't think it's as depressing as those two other games, because at least you have agency in what's going on, sort of, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, I want to be able to have an ending which has me as a cult leader and succeeding in whatever it is I want. I don't even know if I'm supposed to summon Cthulhu or what. I just know I'm supposed to have a cult. And it does talk about performing rites and rituals later in the game. I mean, so we'll see. Although I did find out a way how if a minion is about to leave me, you know, instead of paying him, I just lock him up and make him starve to death. And the corpse that I get from that I could use for something, maybe.
What a game.
Here's the thing, this game is deep, you know, it's sort of like one of those games in which you say, I wonder if I can do this. Oh, I can. Like, what was the game that you were playing? It wasn't Pillars 2, Scott. It was the other, mm-hmm. It was the RPG. Was it Pillars 2?
Yeah, Pillars 2, I was playing, yes.
Remember how it was, can I do this? Oh, yes, I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the sort of game, is that you'll be shocked, like, oh, well, if I do this logical thing, oh, yes, it does do it.
And yeah, that is always good when the game rewards you for doing that, and they put that, or that agency in there that allows you to, you know, do things that you might not necessarily have thought you could do in a game, and they allow you to do that and explore that. So, yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
Anyways, so we've got some news. TJ, why don't you take the first news item?
All right. The Battlefield 5 beta will take place in early September, from PC Gamer. Electronic Arts has confirmed that Battlefield 5 will have an open beta, and that it will take place sometime in the first part of September. A specific date hasn't been revealed yet, but EA did discuss some of the things that will change based on what it learned from the recent leak included closed alpha test. EA acknowledged some issues with matchmaking during the testing period, and promised improved matchmaking and stability for the future, and also touched on specific elements it's working on, such as the queue and chat systems. The revive system will be sped up and tuned to feel less clunky, and ammo inventories for some weapons will be adjusted. The V1 rocket and Churchill crocodile tank reinforcements will be tweaked. Apparently the V1 was a little too powerful. As will Time to Kill, or TTK, which EA said led to polarizing feedback from players in the alpha. It's worth mentioning that TTK is not just determined by how powerful weapons are. For instance, it's also related to how fast the game lets you react to being fired at, EA wrote. We're looking at how fast you can assess a threat and understand from where the fire is coming. Giving you good communication on enemy fire will let you fight back and survive longer. We're also fine-tuning the amount of camera shake that occurs when you're hit. If these adjustments aren't enough, we'll look at tweaking the damage of weapons. Battlefield 5 is set up to come out on October 11th for Origin Access subscribers, October 16th for owners of the Deluxe Edition, and October 19th for everyone else.
What this sounds like is that there's some really powerful weapons that do massive damage, but they're slow, and it's like you should be able to have time to react. So it doesn't matter how powerful they are. It's more like, yeah, but can people... Is it like a slow moving... Do you remember... You ever play Unreal Tournament and you had the Redeemer? And the Redeemer was this nuke that just blew up everything in a area and just jibbed everything? But you could hear it coming, and you could shoot it if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, yeah, it may be, you may have this big-ass gun that fires and does 2 billion damage, but if people know it's coming and people, you know, can avoid it, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, it's big, but you can avoid it, so don't get hit by it.
Right. And I mean, like, balancing weapons in games like these, especially nowadays, is just, it's a heck of a time, and I don't wish that kind of effort on anyone, because it's such a fine tune to find the balance on making a weapon good, and making it too good, or making it bad, or making it just unusable.
Yeah. So, it sounds like the tank and the rocket are summoned, sort of like in earlier Call of Duties, you know, when you got a hit streak, you could summon a weapon that's out of, you know, that's sort of like you're calling for an airstrike or something. So it sounds like you're going to have environmental, what's it called, weaponry.
Yeah. And, John, something on your end is acting up again. I don't know what it is. It's a little bit of creating a bit of static.
I don't think so.
Okay, it just stopped, whatever it was.
Anyways.
Okay. But yeah, it is likely like kill streaks where, a V1 rocket sounds like something you'd need to work your way up to and not have.
Actually, you know, that reminds me of Halo 5, you know, and when you play Halo 5 multiplayer, you have to build up your levels, and when you have a big enough level and you have enough money, you can go to a terminal and request an item from the terminal. Maybe it's something like that. In which, you know, I got to level 6, which means I can spend the 6 level points on this kind of, what's it called, vehicle or weapon.
Yeah, or maybe like a Battlefront way of going about it, where you have these tokens that you have to get a hold of, and they only spawn every so often.
Are you looking forward to Battlefield 5? Because, yeah, or Battlefield V, however they want to call it. I don't know what they're going to call it. But, what do you think of Battlefield V so far?
I didn't play any of Battlefield 1 or Battlefield 4, but the idea of it has looked quite a bit like Bad Company 2 in terms of destructibility and just like the amount of reworking you can do with the environment depending on what you destroy and how you use it. So that at least looks cool and interesting to me, and I'm willing to give it a try.
Yeah. We're going to move on to the next item. Rainbow Six Siege now insta-banning players for using hate speech, and this comes first from IGN. Ubisoft has rolled out a new banning system in the Rainbow Six Siege as part of its quote-unquote toxicity management plan, targeting players that use hateful language in the game's text chat. Back in April, Ubisoft outlined its plan to manage player behavior in Rainbow Six Siege, and now players who breach the code of... Damn it. And now players who breach the code of conduct by using quote-unquote language or content deemed illegal, dangerous, threatening, abusive, obscene, vulgar, defamatory, hateful, racist, sexist, ethically offensive, or constituting harassment are finding themselves banned. PC Gamer reports that Ubisoft started dropping the ban hammer at the tail end of last week, with a number of players complaining that they had been instantly banned after using homophobic and racist slurs in a chat. After one player bemoaned their ban on Twitter, the official Rainbow Six Siege account replied saying, "Fighting against toxicity and cleaning up Siege environment is very real and important issue." By the way, later in the same chat, they just said goodbye.
Somebody yelled at them for banning them for using a slur, and Rainbow Six Siege said goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I weighed in too, so you might find in my chat just people, you know, what's it called, complaining about freedom of speech, and basically we all know where that leads. So, yeah, are you being arrested by the government? No. Well, then, you know, that you're just an asshole and they're kicking you out the door, you know?
I agree that people need to be punished for being assholes. There needs to be consequences.
My favorite argument is that, well, the game is rated mature.
That is a dumb argument.
You want to hear my yes. response to that? Yes, the game is rated M for mature, not I for immature.
There you go.
I mean, yeah, it's rated for mature for content, but you know what? If you're immature, then you shouldn't be playing an immature game.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know what? When I go into Grand Theft Auto V, I can expect that there's going to be some colorful words and language and slurs and all that jazz. That said, that is part of the game. Those are those people saying those things.
Let me complete the rest of the article, because there is some stats to go along with it. After the first instance of breaching the game's code of contact, players were reportedly banned for 27 minutes and were unable to play Siege at all, including custom games. Second and third offenses resulted in two-hour bans, with the third leading to an official investigation that carries the risk of a permaban. Ubisoft's blog update outlined ban periods as lasting for 2, 7, and 15 days, with the possibility of a permaban to follow, quote-unquote, depending on severity, although the update noted this is not a strict progression of bans. Particularly egregious offenders can be permanently banned without warning, 2, 7, or 15-day ban being applied beforehand. As well as monitoring players' language, Ubisoft's plans to curb behavior it deems toxic includes methods to address intentional team killing and a chat filtering system. By the way, that's the other thing was, well, they're focusing on this. Why aren't they focusing on stuff like cheating and team killing? Yeah, they can actually do more than one thing at once. It's not like they can't do the other thing without doing this thing.
Yeah. It's always funny how people seem to think that you can't have a company do multiple tasks at once, or have multiple people accomplishing, you know, multitasking, you know? It's so, yeah, you got them investigating cheating, and this is obviously an important thing. This bad behavior has been let go for so long that it really needs to finally get attention to it, because it's ridiculous.
Finally, last season in-game launched last month with two new defenders and a new map in the Year 3 Season 2 update, Operation Parabellum. So you probably know more about that, although I don't know if you've been playing a lot of Siege since you've been playing all this other stuff, DJ.
Yeah, I've been kind of all over the place. I haven't gotten back to Rainbow Six Siege in a minute. I watched the esports scene closely and observe who's playing well and not. But I haven't actually been too much.
You've just been
in the game,
ranking high in tournaments, in fighting game tournaments.
Right, right. But this is good. This is something that everybody should be considering in their multiplayer online game, because, like, I mean, my brother was down here recently for my wedding, and I was talking to him about, like, online multiplayer games, and that is a constant concern for people who want to play multiplayer online games, regardless of the rating of the game.
Yeah.
It's a problem that like, you have to closely monitor and safeguard any kid that you're allowing to play these games.
Well, it's not only that, but also, you know, I don't play online anymore. I don't play Halo 5. I don't play, you know, other online games. I mean, I haven't even played Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, although I've never really had any bad thing there, but I do turn the chat off because there are too many squealing children on that game. It's sort of like, stop. You know, I'd rather play with people with testosterone. I can't really complain about that, because fine, you know, the kids are playing and they're not, you know, they're not being abusive. They're just having fun. I just have to turn off the chat because it's just grating to my ears sometimes.
Yeah, that's another thing is, yeah, I play the game to listen to the content of the game, and if it's in context, it works. I don't play the game to listen to some 12-year-old say what he did to my mom or say what he thinks of my sexuality.
That. It's just that it ruins the fantasy that you're playing with other adults.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, thing, they're good players, though, so I just turn off the chat and just, you know, what they need is, I'd like to see an icon, more of an icon system, a nonverbal communication thing.
I disagree. I don't think they're good players, and I'll prove it.
Well, they're racking up a lot of wins and getting a lot of scores, so yeah, they're good players.
When
at
somebody
least
loses to me,
Zombies Garden Warfare 2.
The fact of the matter is, I never get people yelling slurs at me
I'm about children. You know, I'm not talking about children being rude. I'm not talking about children saying slurs. I'm just talking about children just talking. It just ruins the fantasy.
I've never had anyone throw slurs at me unless they were unless they lost to me. In which case, you can call me all the things in the world, but you're still a loser.
And you said this that when he blurted out the slur, you said that you know it came out not because he was frustrated, but because it's a comfortable term for him. You know, it's like when you're frustrated, you know, I'll say fuck or shit, you know, and I won't say a racial or homophobic slur.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's not something I'm comfortable with.
Right, but he is.
I mean, at worst, I'll say motherfucker, but that's referring to myself.
And when it comes down to it, like, people will come up with every excuse in the world for why this isn't going to work or it shouldn't be done this way. And that's a stupid thing, is that there's people that think that because you can't ban all toxicity in one fell swoop, you shouldn't do things like this that even combat it. It's like, no, that's stupid. And then there's, like, the excuse of, like, colloquialisms, like, listen, buddy, in the context of you losing in an online shooter, no one's going to believe that you were referring to the British colloquialism for a pile of sticks or the African region of Niger. That's just not what you meant, and well, everybody
or
knows
burning,
it.
Or the other way, the burning embers or a type of sausage.
Yeah.
For the F word. I mean, I'll say it. I don't give a shit. But, you know, I won't say it in public.
But for these people to pretend like in the context of the situation, they actually meant it to be harmless and people could face consequences
that are
innocent.
Niger and Nigerian. It's not pronounced that way. There's just one G there.
I said Niger.
No, I'm just saying in trying to conflate it to the slur. It's like it doesn't work that way.
And that's what I'm saying, is that in the context of the situation, you know what you were trying to say. Don't pretend like you were saying anything else, because no one ever throws those words around.
Oh, you know, and here's the thing. I would never say anything in an online chat that I wouldn't say in person to other people. So here's the thing. You want to say those words? Good. Go say it in front of their face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all know about GIF, the Greater Internet Fuckwad Theory, which basically says forum plus anonymity equals fuckwad. Thank you, Penny Arcade. Yeah, it's easy to do when you're not in the same room with the other person.
Yep. Say it to their face. So good on Ubisoft. I'm happy for it. I am all right with this kind of online censorship that infringes on my first I know I'm conflating this and blowing it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay with this hyperbolic stomping of my First Amendment rights.
You know, here's the you've seen the picture before, the banhammer, stern but fair. I know everybody's seen that picture with the guy with the mallet. And you know what? Here's the thing. If you don't like it, fine. You can complain. Just, you know, it's sort of like a bar kicking out. You know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty much like a restaurant. And you can walk into a restaurant and scream all those things there, and you will probably get your ass kicked and thrown out.
Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Pokemon Go Fest attendance announced. This is from IGN. Pokemon Go Fest 2018 drew a crowd of 21,000 attendees on-site in Chicago this past weekend, with 180,000 playing the game in the surrounding Chicago area. Event attendees walked on average more than 3.5 miles while catching an average of 350 Pokemon and completing 36 research tasks between July 14th and 15th. That's a lot. Compared to last year being clustered in Grant Park, the 2018 event consisted of 1.8-mile curated course for players to explore through Lincoln Park. The course featured four dynamic habitats, from deserts with cacti to glacial habitat with snowstorms, all filled with 50 species of Pokemon. Players encountered Pokemon such as Lucutl, Torkoal, and Metagross, while doing special research tasks as they were searching for the mythical Pokemon Celebi. Along with the hunt for Pokemon, attendees were involved with team tent activities, including photo ops and various contests. The city of Chicago itself had a raid battles occurring throughout the weekend. In preparation for Pokemon Go Fest 2018, Niantic prepared themselves with enough portable cell towers and backup plans to make sure there was not a repeat of last year. Tens of millions of players from all over the world took part in Professor Will's Global Challenge and will have access to those bonuses until July 23rd. That's a good success for there.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, basically Niantic, for Linkin Park, you know, changed it so that there were specific regions within the park. You know, for those who don't know what Pokemon Go is, for the two or three of you, it's an augmented reality game in which you walk around and real-life spots in the world correspond, and you can catch Pokemon. I mean, it's not exactly a very complicated game. You just flick your Pokeball at them. But the fact that it's an augmented reality game, it really hit it. It sort of faded in the past year, but this created a resurgence, especially since the second mythical Pokemon that's appeared, which, as you mentioned, was Celebi. And just, you know, it's great, but remember, just don't keep your head buried in that cell phone. Don't, because people were getting hurt when it first was released because they weren't paying attention to the world around them, including walking off cliffs.
There's some irony there because you're looking at reality through your phone, so you think you would see the environment and...
Well, not always. I mean, sometimes you pull up the map, you know, which shows things on the map. So you're not looking through your camera. You're looking at a map. And remember, all those businesses said, "Yeah, cannot come in here to punt Pokemon because you know this is a business." there were some that said, "Yeah, come on in." Usually, it was like employment agencies and stuff like that. But one of the things I noticed is that attendees walked more than an average of 3.5 miles, which means they were getting some exercise at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, I'm glad that they're setting up the infrastructure for this because, who knew that when you put 180,000 people in a place, the Wi-Fi turns into holy hell.
Well, not even Wi-Fi. We're talking about cell phone service.
Well, just cell phone service. Anyone who's been to a concert outdoor anywhere knows about cell phone service and what it happens when you get a whole bunch of people with cell phones in one place. So I'm glad to see that they're building up the infrastructure a little better, working on making it a little bit better, and hopefully it'll turn out better this time because the last few times they've tried this have been spotty.
Well, apparently it worked. I mean, this is something that just happened in the past 2 days. We're recording on the 16th, so it was on the 14th and 15th. I mean, now the worldwide stuff is still going on through next week.
Okay, yeah, then that's good. I'm happy to hear it, because the last time I remember this happening, it was awful.
The only thing I have a problem with is I wish they would make it a better game. It's just such a half effort to me, the game itself. They could have done so much more with it.
It's addictive, though. Like, for people, like, I mean, my wife played it for a long time.
Well,
I know.
It doesn't require that much. It has a very low-grade entry, you know. Sort of like, yeah, just look around for Pokemon and flick your Pokeball at them.
Right, but the uniqueness comes out of the fact that there are only specific Pokemons in certain areas, even around the world. Like, there are certain Pokemon in
don't
China.
Don't tell me you have to fly to Helsinki just to get a certain type of Pokemon.
There were some that were like straight up in India that I was hearing that you could only find a certain Pokemon there, and I had friends that were like looking to.
Cheap stuff in India are actually kind of cheap. I would love it if Niantic was a dick and just made one special kind of ice Pokemon that only appeared in the Antarctic.
Yeah, I mean. but they had that where, like, I had friends on my social media feeds that were looking to friend up with folks from certain areas to see if they could do some trading on a very specific type of Pokemon if they were traveling.
Well, that, you know, you could be the most popular scientist in the world if you're the only person who had a single type of rare Pokemon that can only be found in Antarctica.
Indeed.
Yes, I'm Professor Snow. This is my friend Professor Ice and Madam Blizzard.
That guy could literally make money going down to, because people are crazy about this game still. It still has a lot of good players from what you can see here, and that person would straight up be able to make money on just like putting up Craigslist ads, going to Antarctica and coming back and trading Pokemon.
Well, one of the biggest things about Pokemon Go is that you do have people who go out in groups now. You know, there are group Pokemon Go players. You just go together, and it's partly to play the game, but also just, you know, chilling, hanging out with friends, you know, having an activity. Go ahead.
I had a group of those people come into my bar once and not buy a single beer but do the Pokemon thing, and it was super annoying. Mm. But I get it.
Hey, you know, here's the thing, but they did come into your bar, so maybe next time they'll say, oh, there's wings here. Unless they were 14 years old, then now, yeah, they shouldn't be in your bar now, should they?
Yeah. Well, most of them were of age, so.
Oh, okay. Well, there at least there's that.
Yeah.
But you know what you could do? You could tell them, hey, you know, what's it called? I play Pokemon, and this is the kind of Pokemon who come here. So, you know, make it really inviting, and maybe they'll. If they're college students, then they'll definitely will come, unless they're like from another, like from New York or something, or LA or Boise.
Yeah, but then I'd have to play the game and figure out the specifics of that, and
you don't have to play it well. You don't have to be good at the game. Just say, "Hey, I'm one of you," and hold up your Pokemon Go thing. And then, you know, actually, you know, you could make special drinks called like a Pikachu Cosmo, or you know, special drinks that are named after Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Star Citizen refund refusals, and this comes to us from Blues News. Longtime backers of Star Citizen Project are no longer able to secure refunds from the Cloud Imperium Games, reports Attack of the Fanboy. They note a Reddit post from a customer who sued to get a refund and lost in small claims court. Word is that CIG is now enforcing a change to the terms of service that was made around a year ago that permits them to refuse refunds requested more than 14 days after a pledge, which this court decision upheld. CIG now has collected almost $190 million in funding from over 2 million backers since 2011 for a project originally planned for 2014 release, which helps explain why some have lost patience that this has evolved into two different games and still in the alpha stage of development. Okay, here's the thing. You're an idiot. Okay? You're an idiot. You backed the game, and it's perfectly reasonable for people to request a refund 14 days after making a pledge. That's perfectly reasonable. To do it, within 14 years. It's basically, you know, after 2 weeks, maybe not, you know. But if you're backing this in 2011 and suddenly you want a refund now, no, absolutely not.
I mean, aside from the fact that crowdfunding is basically investment,
It's not even investment, it's donation. You know, they don't have to give you anything. I mean, those backer rewards, you know, I could do a crowdfunding thing and not give anybody anything. Just, hey, can you help me out with this? You know?
True.
Those backer rewards are just, you know, encouragement for you to. And if you're going to pay $10,000 for a ship, I have no sympathy for you whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. It is exactly that. You don't go into so many different Kickstarters out there, so much kinds of crowdfunding. You go into it and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But like, you don't just get that money back. What's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I backed Psychonauts 2 for an amazing amount of money. I backed it for $850 simply because, one, I'm a fan of Tim Schafer, and I got to know him a little bit. Two, I wanted to get that book bag and all the goodies that come with it and all that stuff. And three, I really like Psychonauts, but I also know that if, for whatever reason, you know, they say, well, it's not coming out until 2022, I'm going to have to throw it away. Okay. There's a game that I back called Stonehearth, which everybody's upset about. Because they're finally releasing the game, and it isn't everything they said it would be, but it's sort of like, yeah, well, guess what? I played a little bit of it when it was in its alpha. I liked it. You know? And this reminds me of Mighty No. 9. Yeah, you backed it, and it isn't everything that you wanted it to be, but then again, it's not. They didn't renege on their promise. I would have a real issue if they decided we're canceling Star Citizen. Not that it's taking a long time. Get some patience. I
mean, even if it wasn't for patience, I mean, sometimes Kickstarters do fail. Sometimes they just like don't end up the way you want them. Even when they cross the threshold of funding, they don't necessarily make it to where they don't necessarily come out the way you want them to be.
Well, we can always look at Tim Schafer's thing with his adventure game. You know, that took a long time. They had to release it in two parts, and they had to do early access sales. You know. Mm-hmm. Even though they were only looking for like $400,000, and they got, what was it, $5 million, $6 million?
Mighty Number 9.
Enough
said.
Here's the thing, Mighty Number 9, I played it. It was okay. It, you know, you can't complain about the graphics because people bought Mega Man 10, and what kind of graphics did it have? You know? It's like, I don't know what they were expecting. You got a platformer called Mighty Number 9. You got exactly what you paid for, and you're complaining?
Complaining.
Maybe they were upset about just before it was released, that trailer that basically insulted people who backed it, calling them nerds and, you know, and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, I can see where I can be pissed off about that, but that was marketing's fault.
Well, I think they expected a little something more out of something from from one of the guys who created Mega Man. I think they expected something that wasn't so buggy when it first came out for how long the game took to make.
I don't think it was buggy. I just think it was nondescript. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't blow your mind. And here's the thing. If you never knew anything about it, if you didn't back it on crowdfunding and they just released this, you know, oh, here's a $20 game. People say, it's okay. It's sort of like overhype. I mean, it's the same thing with No Man's Sky. If no one said anything about No Man's Sky, if Sony didn't show it off three straight E3s, and the lead developer for Hello Games didn't open his mouth, I don't think anybody would have had as much bitching about No Man's Sky. Instead, it would have been sort of like, oh yeah, it's okay. You know, what's interesting is that since he opened his mouth, since it received so much hype, Hello Games was compelled to make even the game better and better and better, and had to keep adding features. Do you think if they didn't have that much hype, they would have added any features? They would just release it, here's a game, here's an open world game, enjoy.
Maybe. I think it also didn't help Mighty Number 9 that like you had, just going back to this really quick, I think it also didn't help that one of the companies that was helping to make it, NT Creates, ended up putting out Azure Striker Gunvolt right around the same time, and Azure Striker Gunvolt was much, much better.
So what? I mean, but you can always have better games. I mean, at least it isn't that Dead Phoenix game or whatever the Phoenix game was. Remember Project Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
It's still supposed to come out, so 2018. Well, make it 2021 or something.
Yeah, but yeah, when it comes to this, I mean,
here's the thing: Star Citizen is going to come out. I don't know what ship it's going to come out, but it's going to come out.
Buyer beware! It's crowdfunding. Don't expect anything.
It's just going to take a long time. But you know, they didn't hire all these actors, and they didn't hire Pedro Camacho. Damn, I forgot his name, but he's a composer. And what I got out of Star Citizen was completely free. I got the music. And the music's awesome. Pedro Camacho. It is Pedro Camacho. Listen to the music for this game, and some of the fake ads, they're just great, and I enjoyed every bit of it. So that's what I got of Star Citizen, and I didn't pay a dime for it. Here's the thing. I'm waiting until it comes out to pay for it. Isn't that an innovative concept?
A little bit.
I mean, just waiting for a game to come out?
Yeah.
You know, maybe waiting for reviews? I mean, I'll pre-order some stuff. I mean, I pre-ordered Shadow of War because I knew what I saw in the previews, you know, and I just had to buy it. Even if I was prepared, I pre-ordered Mass Effect Andromeda, knowing it might be mediocre. And guess what? It was mediocre. But I don't regret not playing it.
Yeah. That's the issue with crowdfunding in a society like this, is that people pay money for something and they expect to get something back. And that's just not the way it works.
I mean, I crowdfunded a few video games. I mean, I crowdfunded Wasteland 2, which I still have not completed. And that didn't stop me from donating to Wasteland 3. I also crowdfunded the video game adaptation of Evolution. And it's not everything it could have been. I mean, it's sort of bare bones. I mean, I would have liked a stat tracker. I would have liked multiplayer, you know. Not multiplayer, but, you know, just a little bit more. But it's kind of bare bones. But on the other hand, the game kicks my ass, so it is teaching me how to play Evolution. So it's doing that. You know, but I did not back Broken Age. And I bought the game, and you know what? I enjoyed it. But I didn't have to crowdfund it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to crowdfund Psychonauts 2. Because I pre-ordered the first Psychonauts. How many people do you know pre-ordered the first Psychonauts? And I got a pre-order bonus of a deck of cards. And people, anytime people doubt me that, oh, you didn't pre-order. Oh, I said, look at this deck of cards, the Psychonauts deck of cards. Still in the trap.
That's pretty neat.
I also have the Red Dead Redemption deck of cards.
My cousin has those, and they're pretty slick.
Yeah, I haven't round wrapped it, because I really have no need to play with the cards, with just a regular deck of playing cards. I know all it's going to have is a back of that thing. But yeah, the Psychonauts deck of cards. You know, how many people do you know have the pre-order bonuses for Psychonauts from 2003?
Yeah.
Them's bragging rights. You know what? I'm going to have Tim sign them with one of those silver Sharpies. You know what I found, by the way? I found my little figurines for Bethesda's first press conference, which came with Doom, Dishonored, and what is the third game? Fallout.
Mm-hmm.
The vinyl figures that they handed out, still in its box. I'm pretty sure that's worth something now. I'll take a picture of it and post it on Twitter, and also link Bethesda. Say, hey, guess what? Do you remember these?
Yeah.
But getting back to start, you know, here's the thing: buyer beware. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, yeah. Turns out capitalism doesn't work so well with crowdfunding.
But here's the thing, though: what Star Citizen proved was that people really want a space sim. And other space sims popped up around it, you know. I mean, Elite Dangerous was a hint of it, you know, and I think part of it was Elite Dangerous inspired Star Citizen. So it's sort of like, yeah, people want this kind of game, you know. Look at, what was that VR game from Eve Valkyrie?
Yes. Which was just sort of a shooter. And not a great one, but it was something that, like, it got the juices flowing when it came to, like, coming out of the hangar and going into a dogfight in space and coming back in, and it was neat. It was a neat little feel.
You know, and I'm actually happy that Star Citizen is coming out in two versions, because if I was to buy it, I'd probably buy the single-player thing, because I really don't give a shit about playing another EVE Online. Because that's what that part of Star Citizen is shaping up to be. It's probably going to be like EVE Online, and I don't need that kind of... Yes, it's fun stories about how people got ripped off of thousands of dollars because of corporate chicanery and, you know, Glad handing behind the scenes and sort of like, oh, look, a surprise attack by these millions of cruisers because they're betraying this thing, and it's like, they're fun stories, but I don't want to be a part of that.
I always go back and forth on whether, if I was going to go in on Star Citizen at this point and actually get the copy, which I'm just going to have to wait until it comes out.
Definitely. Like now you're going to get it when it comes out, whenever that is, maybe 2025 or something.
But this was easily a game that I would have to go ahead and upgrade my PC for. It sounds so cool. Like, the idea of it is awesome, and I hope it's worth every...
Which is why Derek Smart is so jealous of it, and why he keeps on bashing the game, even no matter what, because he tried to make this kind of game and he flopped hard.
Yeah. I mean, I hope it's worth every penny that people have spent on it. And
it'll never be worth every penny people spent on it. No, it's impossible. It's like saying, thinking Duke Nukem Forever will live up to expectations. There was no expectation that Duke Nukem Forever would ever live up to.
Right, but I hope it's what people want it to be, at least 85%. Let's be generous and say 85% of what people want it to be.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to live up to expectations?
I have no reason to think that it would be anything. There's not enough. I don't know enough.
Did you see the first trailer? Not the one that they showed at this C3, but the previous C3 that people watched and said, what?
Yeah.
What's with these cursing animals?
There's not enough out there about it yet for me to think that it's going to be good or bad.
At least it's on page.
I like what I've seen. I like the characters in this world. Beyond Good and Evil has such an imaginative world, and I like the sort of the steampunk anthropomorphic animals forming and humans forming this resistance against a government entity. It carries on to the second game. Yeah, from what we've seen so far, it's not too far off from that. And I am interested to see how that goes. But I have no idea how it's going to go yet.
Do you think Cyberpunk 2077 is going to live up to expectations?
It has to. No reason.
If it only achieves 75%, I'll be pleased as punch.
That said, with the demo that came out and everything that everybody's told me about it, I have no reason to believe that doesn't have a better chance at it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is that I guess CD Projekt Red has earned that
lenience.
Doubt. You know, they've earned that what's it called, benefit of the doubt. And by the way, so is Chris Roberts, by the way. I mean, it's not like this is some schlub coming out from out of the cold. I mean, Ed Freelancer and Wing Commander and all these greats, you know, that's the reason why this earned $190 million, because of him, you know. It's not like he's just, like he's a fly-by-night. It's not even like, what's-his-face, who developed, what was the name of that game that flopped hard on the Xbox? That Diablo-type game. Remember with all the Nordic references? The one that was actually destroyed because Epic, what's it called, won a lawsuit.
Beyond Human.
Yeah, I mean, that developer really didn't earn that much of the benefit of the doubt. I mean, the only thing they tried doing a Kickstarter in which they just basically remade their most popular game, that was for the Wii, you know, and that didn't make it. You know, he just kept on getting himself in more and more trouble. But that's another story entirely. You know, we could talk. I should do a gaming history on Two Human, because that would be a story to tell. Next week we're going to talk about Two Human. Did you ever play?
Yeah, sure. Yes, I played through the whole thing.
Oh yeah,
several times.
Said you had a copy. You still had your copy?
Uh huh.
Okay, so guess what? Any copies that were in stores were destroyed. Just people out there who don't know because of the lawsuit. So
they can't have my copy. It's mine.
Yeah, you paid for it. Or did you?
Dun, dun, dun.
Scott, what do you think?
How long does it take to make a game? I just don't understand. I mean, well, you got 190 million, and what did you do with all of it? Yeah, that's really long.
Well, it's 7 years now since 2011.
Yeah.
But you have to remember, you know, Half-Life 2 took 8 years to make.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have disgruntled investors. I know they know what they got into, but if they're not getting their...
Not all of them are disgruntled. I mean, a lot of them know what's going on, you know. And here's the thing. Here's the thing about CIG, okay, with Cloud Imperium. They keep updates. They talk to people. They don't go... Like, a lot of these failed Kickstarters, you know, you hear the stories, you know, you'll get these updates and then the updates will vanish, right? At least Cloud Imperium is constantly releasing builds, and they're not calling them betas, you know, they're not accelerating development. they're releasing alpha builds because that's what they are. You know, they're not lying. They're not hiding information. I mean, that's the one thing that you want from them.
I will speak to Devil's Advocate and say that there aren't not disgruntled investors if they're taking...
They are disgruntled investors. Yes, I get that. But
if they're asking for refunds and taking them for court over it...
they're not doing anything shady, though.
But on the other end,
developing a game.
And on the other end of that, how long does it take you to figure out that you don't want to be invested in the game anymore? Because if it's more than a year, then...
You knew what you were buying. I mean, what happened? You decided you didn't want to play the game anymore? It's like, oh, whatever. You haven't even played the game and already you're tired of it. What does that say about you? I mean, I just play the game whenever it comes out. Like I said, you know, people are just impatient sometimes. I mean, okay, let me put it this way. Yeah, there is a reason to be impatient. But as long as they're constantly giving you updates, and they don't really have to. I mean, morally they have to. So that people don't feel like they just toss their money in the wind and by the way, it's ready, here it is.
No, that's pretty much what crowdfunding is. It's throwing money at something that you have no idea if it's going to work out or not, and there are no promises as to whether it will be of any substance.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Harry Knowles' Kickstarter campaign. Or that. Or how about the famous Yogs? What was it? The Yogs Kickstarter. Do you remember that?
Yogs Cast.
Yeah, the Yogs Cast Kickstarter that was infamously shady. And then, remember Scott? Remember the Minecraft convention that was one big scam?
Oh yeah.
I would have been pissed. Go to New York. Oh wait, there's no convention. You got the tickets, you got the hotels, and oh, by the way, there's no convention. You were scammed. What?
Yeah, that is terrible.
Yeah. So anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. That was really a flat way to end the podcast, but I don't know any other way. It's just depressing. You know, let's hope the Star Citizen comes out and it's amazeballs.
I mean, we started on a good note. I got married, and I'm going to be married for a long time and played games with him.
Yes, but you didn't have to get married to Star Citizen. See, that's the problem. A lot of people got married to Star Citizen, and now they're trying to give divorce papers, and the judge is saying, nope, you're stuck with her.
See, here I am trying to boost the mood.
Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, have fun, play games, y'all.